This episode of That Mental Ginger Show is recorded at Scuff Studios in Swanston Street, Glasgow. If you're looking to do podcasts, music, or any creative passions, these guys will have you covered. For more information, contact Scuff Studios at scuffed.studios.gla@gmail.com or find them on Facebook or Instagram and drop them a message. Scuff Studios, to nurture your creative passions. All right, troops. Hello and welcome to That Mental Ginger Show with your host Andrew Durning, aka The Mental Ginger. Well, my three faithful followers, we have another very special guest on the show. They're always special in their own way. If you remember from the early versions of That Mental Ginger Show, he was one of the first co-hosts who came on, the rapping bin man, as I called him, John Steele.
All right.
Steely, thank you so much for coming on, my friend.
Thank you for having us on again.
It makes you wonder, why are you so desperate to come back on? What have I tortured you or traumatised you in some way?
I'm not saying that there's a gun pointed at me under the table, man. I'm not saying that at all.
Well, I don't know how it'd be pointed. Both my hands are above the table, so it's a bit worrying if there's a gun pointed at you. Are you sure it's a gun?
The audience doesn't know how talented you are, man.
You flatter me, John, you flatter me.
That got weird fast.
Yeah, really, really did. But it wouldn't be us if it didn't get weird.
That's true.
In some way, because that's essentially like how we met. We were weird kids in primary. It was primary six you came to our school, wasn't it?
Aye, primary six. We got tore away from Dunrobin and took to Tobray. Yep. And we were forced to wear the purple.
The purple and yellow of Tobray.
And I was a yellow and brown boy till I had to go there, man.
At least yellow was the constant.
Aye.
Yeah. So what I like to do with every episode of That Mental Ginger Show is start with the guest's origin story, because we all have an origin story. So, John, tell us about your origin story.
Well, my mum and dad loved each other quite a lot, and then they had Ross, and then suddenly, a couple of months later, they tell my mum she was pregnant again with me, and just was then born. Came into the world the way screaming like that, hello! same as yourself, Bells Hill boy.
Hey!
And I grew up Airdrie, mate. I stayed there for the majority of my life.
Whereabouts in Airdrie were you always got Lee?
We were Petersburn originally, and then when we moved from Petersburn to got Lee, that's when they swapped schools, because it was right next door, so. But I got Lee boy, Tom Hill. Maybe they'll know who that is, but know that I was in the Tamahill, you know, just that's what they shouted.
Yeah. Well, what was it like kind of transferring schools? Because I never had to do that. Because when we moved to Hunter Street, I had the option of moving to Chapel Side, but because I had made a friend, a singular friend, they decided not to move me. So how was it going from, especially that late in the game?
Oh, it's horrible, man. Absolutely horrible. Nobody wants to be your pal. I was lucky that my grand's next door neighbour was my mate Chris, and he was put into his class. So if he didn't like me, he was forced to sit next to me for the rest of that school year, you know. So it was hard. I mean, even when you're going into primary six, you're it's intimidating. You're I've now got to try to find who the weird ones are in here. And yeah, at school, you don't know you're weird until you're going to a new school, and then you've got to find that group again. Not a lot of bad memories or good memories for Dunrobin or Tobray Primary. That's just as it went.
Just kind of as is.
You get a lot of hassle because me and Ross from the same school year. It's he's twins, and it's no, he's my big brother, and it's but you're the same year, school year. And then we look nothing like each other. He's a foot taller and looks like Desperate Dan, and I'm here looking like a lumberjack fell off the wagon.
If Ross is watching this, he'll be who are you calling Desperate Dan?
Well, he looks more like Bam Margera now, you know, but not healthy Bam.
Yeah.
Bam now.
All right.
Yeah.
That's also not a good compliment. Ross, I still think you look no bad, buddy, don't worry. So, you came to our school and you fell in with our motley crew.
Aye, well, that was me tagging on with Ross, because Ross palled with all yous, and I'm like, hi, can I be your friends too?
Yeah.
Like, please talk to me.
Yeah. Well, you lasted longer than Ross had. Ross decided to, bug off. He's in London now, isn't he?
Aye, he escaped Airdrie. He got away.
He escaped Scotland?
Aye. He had a plan, and he actually stuck to it, you know.
Good on him.
He's got slightly less, Greek wet weather down there, you know.
Yeah, well, only slightly.
Slightly, aye. Yeah. He gets 4 days of sunshine instead of the 3 that Scotland gets.
I think you're pushing it that we get 3. So what was it like, what your experience of high school, Airdrie Academy, the death trap for me?
It was hard because I was the smallest person in my class all through my life, because my mum and dad kept me and Ross at school at the same time. So I was he was 5, I was 4.5. So we short arse. If I was a year back, I would have still been the smallest in the class, but you know, they would have been the same age. You get the usual nonsense, you're picked on wee man and all that. And but when I started working the nightclub, suddenly people are like, oh, John works in a nightclub, well, we'll be his pal now. So I rode on that and got under the radar and didn't get as much hassle as other folk did.
When did you start working in the nightclubs again?
Legally, when I was 17, but illegally when I was 16, kidding on, I was 17.
And so I was back in the Centre Point, or Centre Pants days, as we call it.
Back when that was an establishment.
Yeah, it's not that anymore. Is it still classed as Centre Point, or is it?
I don't know. It's been a long time. I got well away from there.
Yeah, well, I think I went there for literally 6 months, and it was just because you were working there.
Oh, I got a birthday. Oh, he's in. Remember Craig came in and he didn't like me shouting at him because I turned into a mini Hitler. It was like that. You're in charge of this bar, John. And they have just done it to see me go power mad.
Yeah.
Shouting at my pals, pick up those glasses, get that man up there. And it's you're just a glass collector. Shut up. You know, but just power mad.
You were a pretty good glass collector, though. I can still remember you dancing about with about 15 glasses on your leg. Spinning about with the other leg as well. No dropping them, and me just looking, going, oh God, this is going to fall. And surprisingly, didn't they?
It's a talent that's unfortunately hasn't aided me at all after leaving Centre Point. I've never needed to stack glasses for my shoe as high as I can carry.
That's a special skill.
It's a unique, pointless skill. Probably some pub.
My unique pointless skill is setting up this podcast. So, in fairness, look, we've all got that. But you quite like your arts as well. You're quite good at the guitar, and you're also very good at spitting some raps on the mic, as they say. So, what got you into, in specifically, the guitar? We kind of touched on the rapping side of it in the old carnation of the show. What got you into the music side, really?
My dad plays the guitar. He's been battering out songs for years and that. It used to be punishment, you'd have to sit and listen to my dad play the guitar when you'd done something wrong. And Ross hated it, but eventually I kind of get brainwashed into liking it as a way, you know. So it wasn't a punishment, but my dad kind of hooked into playing the guitar, and I was all right, cool, I can do that. He taught his chords and then kind of moved away into actually try to write stuff of my own, pure cheesy nonsense and all that. Singing about a clock in the... I remember when I was watching Hercules or Xena on Channel 5 in the room, and I'm just listening to the clock, and I was 9 or 10. And I'm Dad, I've got a song, TikTok goes the clock. And it's that's all I had. And I'm I've got a song. And then he fucking barred a couple of lines on it, and then it was two, an E minor and a G. I call them my Nirvana chords. For that point, I was right, give me a bit of writing, and it doesn't matter if it sounds cheesy or that, but the limitations of not being able to sing kind of hinders is that people don't like the Bob Dylan sound.
Well, that's kind of understandable, but I like it. I think it's all right.
There's a small market somewhere for it.
So what are you thinking about with your rap? Are you ever going to get those lyrics scooped out the brain and recorded in a studio or something?
Maybe one day when I'm really happy with What I'm writing, I'm at a point where I'm kind of like a step behind where I used to be with writing. And now it's like lots of different topics in one song instead of being able to single it one topic and really write into that and get more in depth. Whereas I was doing that before, but I guess if you get out of the habit, you've got to retrain yourself and you've got to write maybe about 40 lines of absolute rubbish before you get one line that you're happy with, and then that one line then extends into other aspects of the song, or maybe the hook, or you can go in on another, put that to a verse. So it's just being happy with what I've got, eventually doing something with it.
I think that's always a thing with performers, isn't it? Like, we're always striving for perfection, even though it's never going to happen. At the most, we'll maybe get to 97%, 98% at a push.
I'm never happy.
Yeah. Well, 98% isn't
100%,
is it?
See, I think it's the same logic my dad's got, where if I record the song, then that's me saying, that's finished. Mm. And then when it's recorded, that's it, that's the end product. You can't change it, you can't take or like change that one line. So I think there's that, getting that initial fear out the road.
That's the whole point of, you know, redubbing, remixing, remastering. You can always, that's why people do it. It's because they think, oh, there's something I could change about that, so let's change it.
I don't like George Lucas my music.
Well, you don't know. You could George Lucas it, you could Michael Jackson it, you don't know.
Oh, that's the point.
But, so, as a mental health show, so what we'll need to kind of touch on that, and you've not exactly had the smoothest of runs in your life. But, so, I know that your mum isn't around anymore.
Aye, she went to the shops, never came back.
How old were you when that how old were you when that happened?
My mum and dad divorced when I was 8, 9.
That must have been rough, man.
It was, I'd quite in the 90s as well. You kind of, for a while, we were the only family with a mum and dad. In Petersburg, you know, it was we were the posh ones, and then I was like one of the group. You don't know how to really hang it, and the usual thing where you're getting told, oh, just don't blame yourselves, but you're away and you do. You think maybe if I'd done something else, or they wouldn't be screaming, shouting at each other, but just people grow apart in that. So
yeah,
it takes you a while to get at it.
Was it like in an ugly divorce, or was it like relatively calm? Or
we didn't see anything, you know. We were kind of kept away from it.
No, in a way, that's probably like that's a really good sign of like how good your parents were. Well, because because you never really got exposed to it, but you obviously did know something happened. Where did your mum go to?
When she ended up, she disappeared for a couple of years, and then.
What, disappeared as in, like, no contact with you or anything?
Aye, she was going through her own stuff and that, so she needed to get her own head sorted.
That was back when, well, so mental health wasn't as well known back then, so it would have been harder to probably get some help.
I don't know where she had went to hang out, but she went to Bells Hill. We'd seen her for like a year or there. She was in a house and hang they set up.
Yeah.
And then, again, it was always like you get to see her for a wee bit and then she'd disappear, and then you get to see her again for maybe a year and then she'd disappear again.
That must have been rough on you, man.
I don't know. It's a way, and you've got, it either breaks you or you bury it and then you push it down and then it explodes when you're older, you know?
You did have a wee kind of bit when you were, a teenager, I can say, well, in the nicest possible way, you were a bit of a dick.
I was a borderline alcoholic, man.
Yeah, but what?
I drank.
I mean, there was stuff that, we never knew about at the time, and then you told us, but if you're comfortable talking about it, you can.
A lot of it was, it was lashing out at people because I couldn't, I was like, you automatically go into the head of, she doesn't love you. And she's like, that's how she can just get up and leave, because you hear all the time about like dad's up and leaving.
Yeah, you never really hear much about the mum, do you?
And in the 90s, my dad took three boys on, so it was like just himself. So we'd had a lot of kind of hang on, like, as much as it's like you kind of try to get air it as a way, and I'm quite family orientated, whether it's like the actual main family, that's like you always do what's best for that. But she kind of, when you do stuff to help, I mean, I drank quite a lot. I drank just, it wasn't for fun.
Mm. When did you start drinking?
14.
Yeah.
14,
aye. Yeah, well, that's the thing they never really 15. Tell you about, that you know, what. You do start drinking young. What? It doesn't even matter if it's if we've got not like the excuse, what, so to speak, but like my brother started drinking when he was like 14, 13. That's just because he was a prick.
Yeah.
but you had like legitimate like hard hitting stuff to deal with. Like your mum wasn't around. Like you were trying to cope with that, and it wasn't working. That must have been fucking rough for you, man.
The drink was, it was a case, it was my head's always 1,000 thoughts, and I'm always processing, like going there, scenarios and conversations, and I think that's a thing that I do for like that. I just, the thing is that I was a wane. You start going there every conversation, maybe say this and then that and this. It's a mental thing to be able to, like, it fucks with you. You can't sleep sometimes because your brain just doesn't shut down. It's a fucking circus.
You think that's maybe why you were saying your rapping's kind of, it's loads of thoughts that come down and none of them really kind of tie in. You think maybe it's, there's a link with that?
Aye, definitely, the way I'm writing has a lot of it. It's like, oh, I write something like that line, and then straight away I'm like, oh, but that topic and this topic, and it's maybe a way of me processing, trying to get the thoughts out my head onto paper, and then that clears maybe a bit of space. But I definitely, the writing's a coping mechanism as well. But.
Yeah, obviously you had the drink, but you don't drink anymore. Like how many years have you been sober now?
Well, I have a drink once a year.
Once a year?
Not teetotal, but I'll have a drink at Christmas, but I've learned moderation.
Yeah.
The problem in the background was I didn't know when to stop. There's 4 bottles of vodka on the table at a house party. Well, the house party is no meant to stop till the 4 bottles of vodka's drank. Yeah, whether or not everybody else is lying asleep and passed out, it's like, well, I can still drink that.
Yep, and you're still going. Mm.
Aye. Fall asleep, spew, wake up, empty stomach, continue.
Mm. Did you do like the kind of day drinking thing? Like you would crack open like a bottle of vodka in the shower or something because it was the same colour?
No. It was just like, it was funny because like when working with Centrepoint, I got really bad at that point because I was working in a nightclub and there's things that you can get your, like I was taking ecstasy and that as well. So we were working, staying awake for 4 or 5 days at a time while fucking getting tanked, and then still going to work. And at some points I was still going to school, so I was going to school like Monday to Friday, but working in Centrepoint Thursday to Sunday, and still drinking between and fucking partying and. It was burying a lot of stuff. Yeah.
What was it like? What's being on ecstasy like? Because you know you can find shatterproof rollers that aren't as straight as me. Well, sometimes with that kind of stuff, but
it's euphoria. You can take any problem, right? Like you can do it and go to the nightclub and you can dance. But we never done that. We would be at a house party sitting in. You would like start deconstructing stuff in your head and having these really in-depth conversations where you could take apart problems in your head or just sit there and not be able to open your eyes and chew your face to bits.
So it wasn't like a case of like weed where you go like, oh, if you choke a Smurf, what colour does it turn kind of thing?
I think we did have that conversation.
Did you come up with an answer?
Purple.
Purple.
Purple was the thought. It's like the film Human Traffic. There's a scene where they're at a house party and they're all mad on ecstasy, and they're having a discussion about the Death Star blowing up and how the rebels are actually the bad ones because the second Death Star was getting built at the time. There's no way that the Death Star Empire can get that many contractors in. So there's got to be innocent contractors building the second Death Star.
You basically stole the skit from Clerks.
No, that's Human Traffic. Yeah. That's...
yeah, but they used that kind of thing in Clerks, the movie, as well.
So they did, man.
Yeah. Well, you just ripped off Kevin Smith's idea. Sorry, Kevin Smith.
You need to speak to John Simmons or whatever he's called.
Yeah. See, how long would you say you were kind of in that, like, kind of drink-drug spiral?
Up to about 24. I think at that point, everybody had just had enough of me. You know, and there was a long time of just no having aimed about.
Yeah, because you did kind of drop off the radar for a while. We had the guys' nights, like the Christmas guys' nights, and that was maybe the only time that all of us would see you. I would keep in contact with you like every kind of like every quarter check-in, but like, you still alive? Aye, good.
See, wasn't it like people but, were avoiding us? I mean, I would always get hanged, but I'd always be like, right, I can't behave myself.
Mm.
I don't want to be apologising the next day, like, sorry, pals. Didn't mean to do whatever it was I done, you know? It ends up that it means nothing when you've apologised that many times. And it's like, oh, you should know better.
What would you say was probably the worst thing that you've done? That you can remember or are comfortable talking about on camera?
I tried to take a shite in a doorstep. I can't remember, we're all came out and we were pure hammered, and I was like, we'll go shite in this lassie's doorstep, and I fucking tried it. That's probably a bad one. Absolutely fucking the Wednesday school night where the neighbours had to pick me up off the middle of Gertley Hill because I'd fell asleep in the road.
Jesus.
I went out with my mate Christopher and we went down Cairn Hill and I tanked a ball at Bacardi. I farted on my mate, jumped up in his head, went, I don't remember any of this. But that was bad.
Long as it wasn't one of those like fart and make a mistake kind of ones, then I think that's okay ish.
Aye, there was no brown alert.
Right, that's fine. You won't be saying brown alert in a minute, and don't say I didn't alert you.
Apparently I got carried in. Neighbours are like, we found this, to my dad.
We found this, like, you were just like a, like, just like some random bit of what, bottle on the floor or something.
I'm like, I'm sorry, dad, I'm just half steaming. And he would have murdered me, but his pal was in. I was in the living room, fell backwards, cracked my head off the door, and then fell into my dad's pal's banjo. And then the next morning, my dad woke me up 10 minutes before school started. And was like that, still covered head to toe in crap where I'd fell in the ground and stuff, and I was like, God. In school dying a hangover going, how cruel that man, how the fuck did I get home, what the fuck, and that was the worst, because it was like there was the one that I can remember, but there was a lot of times that I would just black out. And then it was either the most happiest person or it was like pow, hysteria.
I remember seeing you change like that, and for me watching it was terrifying. I get it, because I've been drunk myself, so I know that for a smaller scale, but when you're on that kind of stuff and just watching how quickly you would crash, just wanted to just give you a big hug and tell you, look, everything's gonna be alright. It won't be alright tomorrow or the next day or the next day, but you'll get there. What would you say was the final moment that made you go, nah, screw this, I'm done with that kind of life? Because obviously, spoiler alert, it's not like that anymore.
No, it was when my mum died.
How old were you when she passed?
I was 24, 25, I think. I was in the fruit shop.
Bloody hell. If you don't mind me asking, what was it and what happened? Did you find out, or did?
She had a heart attack. Just stress, fucking brought a heavy duty stress with her running a restaurant and that.
Wow.
But I hadn't spoke to her for 5 years, because I got into an argument, because she said I'd been drinking too much. Because me and my uncle had fell out, and I got kicked out of his house after I smashed it all up. And she took his side, where she was like, I know you were being a dick. And I'm like, fuck you, man, fuck you. And that was the last thing I said to her. And then she died. And jeez. I didn't get the chance to fucking ever say, y'all, I'm sorry.
Well, you've just said it now. What? No matter where she is, like, she'll hear it and she knows. Do you believe that there's something after this? I mean, I do, but I can't say that everybody does, so I've got to clarify that.
I had dinner after this, I'm thinking, man. It's
normally me that makes the inappropriate joke to break the tension. But no.
I don't know, man. I think that's something. If you believe in it, then either is something. If there's no, then you just go to make the best of what you've got.
Yeah. But you've done well to kind of turn things around since then. We've had a bit more of a better relationships kind of since then. See you more, like, get involved in more of my projects. That just makes me question your mental state even more when you agree to do them.
Nah. Self-deprecation punishment, man. Yeah. You know?
That's something that me and you kind of have in common. Like, we'll use that to our advantage. Like, I'll always rip into the fact that I'm ginger. What? And that's my kind of way of doing it. What? Or I'll just use it as a marketing ploy. What? But, so you're now like a fully qualified member of society. You've got a job.
Driving license. 11 years I've been driving.
I got to admit, I never thought I could see you behind the wheel.
That's my biggest achievement.
Yeah, it definitely is. I thought you couldn't even see the road at times.
I've got a wee cushion I sometimes sit on.
Nice.
The first van I had, the seat hang was broke, so I always had to sit up. But seat adjuster and that, I'm all right in my wee van.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're doing so well, man.
Like, your heightest.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of like that.
So, the wee people. Yeah.
Ain't nothing wrong with the wee people. They're the most vicious. What, they're at ball punching height.
Nah, remember that.
Yeah, I do remember that. Right, so we're starting to come up on time, so I'm going to ask the question that I always ask my guests to round off. What, if you could give anybody struggling right now with mental health some advice, what advice would you give them?
It's pretty simple. It'll not last forever. It's temporary. As bad as it gets, there's always light at that end of that tunnel, and you've got to take. Like I've always looked at it as like fucking. It's like life support machine, right?
Mm.
You get ups, and for every up, there's got to be an equal down, and then it all evens itself out. So if you've had a shit start, you'll have a good finish, or it'll be dotted about. So by the end of it, it's all flat.
It's a good metaphor for sex as well.
Well, aye. but that's the way I look at it. For every up, you've got to have an equal down. Mm. And then when it's all said and done, that's you.
Brilliant. Well, so we'll come to the final bit, and that is the Ask Andrew Anything. And that's where, after grilling the guests about all their personal lives, that they get to ask a question, and it's no topic that's off the limits for discussion. And, Steely, have you thought of a question?
Actually, aye.
Oh, crap. Right, here we go. By the way,
alive or dead, if you could have somebody on for your show, who would be your ultimate guest?
Alive or dead? Jeez. Alive, I would love to have Ringo Starr on, and it's because I'm a massive Thomas the Tank Engine fan, as you know.
Thought that.
I would love to have him on to talk about, not about the Beatles, but about Thomas.
You'd get him on for
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah. Because he won't talk about the Beatles, so that's the loophole. You can get him on that and just go, talk about that little blue train. Did you think he was a dick?
The green one that was a dick. Who's he?
Percy's my favourite engine. Fuck you, man.
Sorry, man. It's the last time I'll be on the show, folks.
Oh, definitely not,
just
man.
Look for me in the back of my old cartons. Have you seen this boy?
You still think you're a boy? Fucking hell, man. Right, Steely, it's been...
cheers on that, man.
It's been an absolute pleasure having you on, man. And it's a pleasure to call you a friend, and not only that, but a best friend. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having us, man. Yeah. Same. Cheers.
Yeah. So until next time, he's been John Steele. I've been Andrew Durning. We're saying take care. Stay safe. Bye-bye.